Okay, do a sound check. Check, check.
Check, 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 check.
More.
Check, 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 check.
Okay.
Check.
Talk louder.
I'm talking louder.
Okay, that's better.
That's better?
Yeah.
That's where you want me?
That's where I want you.
That's where you want me. Darn. Okay, so you want... Okay, so I'm recording this.
Yeah.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Look at them, madame. Have you ever in your entire life seen anything so beautiful?
I'm sorry, I don't know anything about stamps.
This is the gentle art of philately, otherwise known as stamp collecting. Here's a pile of stamps carefully culled from swap meets and garage sales.
Rupert, what are you thinking of?
Oh, I was just thinking of all the years I've wasted collecting stamps.
Oh, like stamp collecting. Now, that's all right. That's quite a nice hobby, that.
Yeah, but it's not enough. Don't you understand? I'm lonely. I'm so terribly lonely.
All right, Homer. You beat those stamp Nazis with good old-fashioned American complaining.
Homer, if it weren't for you, we'd be at the mercy of weekend philatelists.
You know, why didn't you just say stamp collectors?
Because I'm tired of dumbing myself down for you.
I mean, I have to say, when I heard that, like, people actually watch this show, I was actually pretty surprised.
I'm Ernest Borgnine. I collect stamps.
From Spain and two from Japan. I got a couple from Israel and Azerbaijan. I got a plenty from Poland, but none from Sudan or from Fiji or Uzbekistan.
Stamp collecting happens when we dream together.
Welcome to Stamp Show here today, episode 101. Cash and Scott just got back from Chicago PEX. Stamp Show here today was there recording many of the dealers and officials. Here are the highlights. Enjoy.
Test, test, test. The reason why we take the big mic is so that people know that they're on a microphone. Before we had the little square one, it's like, are you recording me? And I go, yeah. And you go, oh. It's like, now you say, are you recording me? And I go, what do you think that is?
Well, we're philatelists and we're not sure yet.
Yes. Well, I'm here in Chicago PEX with Tom and Charles. Why don't you both introduce yourself?
I'm Tom Gates, Sr., Triple S Postal History.
And I'm Charles Epting, President of H.R. Harmer Philatelic Auctions.
And we're going to discuss that a little bit right now. First of all, you are incredibly young to be heading up one of the largest auction houses in the entire world, really. First of all, tell us about H.R. Harmer, and then tell us how you got in and what's going on. And Tom, you are big time with postal history, like we said. Feel free to add in at any time. I notice you have some NRA stuff here. What'd you get?
I'm a big time collector of Scott 732, which is the 3-cent NRA stamp from 1933. I was able to find some fun uses, a morning cover, a couple of foreign destinations, airmails to strange places around the world, as well as what I think is really neat is a UPU specimen overprint. From South Africa, one of the only known specimen overprints for this little stamp. So, even though it's a cheap stamp, the catalog's 25 cents. You can have a lot of fun the deeper you dig.
And I'm looking there, you have a morning cover.
Yeah, morning covers were more or less out of style by the 1930s. Yeah. So coming across one isn't the most common thing in the world. It's kind of a late use of a morning cover, and it's got my little purple stamp.
Do you like the NRA period, or... I studied economics, I'm totally into NRA and all that.
I feel the need to say that I'm talking about the National Recovery Administration, not the National Rifle Association, because people always think the wrong thing when I say that. I'm fascinated by the 1930s, whether it's music, film, architecture, art, literature. I just have this sort of overarching obsession with the 1930s, and the National Recovery Administration for me is really indicative of that time period. And it's really this nice little snapshot of where the United States was during the Great Depression.
Yeah, yeah. Lots of stuff going on, all political.
Yes, and I think that this stamp in particular is interesting because it was, up until that time, the most overtly political stamp issue of all time. Collectors at the time didn't know whether it was a commemorative or a definitive because it wasn't really either. It was a propaganda issue promoting President Roosevelt, and it really ruffled the feathers of a lot of collectors in 1933.
Oh, that's a really good point. I like that as a, yeah.
Well, and the thing that really got people riled up is if you look at the stamp closely, it's four workers marching together as the design, and one of them has a hammer and one of them has a sickle.
Uh-oh.
Which was not lost on people in 1933 America. So
yeah.
There were all these rumors and conspiracies of sympathies with the Soviet Union, and it's just a very politically charged stamp issue. I think that it really tells a lot of neat stories about American history.
Oh.
Kai, I've done this for a half a century, and I just learned something.
I've collected this stamp forever. I've gone through hundreds of them. I've gone through sheets of this stamp. Never realized that, yeah, it's not really a commemorative, it's not a definitive, it's a propaganda stamp. I can't think of any other U.S. propaganda stamps.
No, and the just sort of an epilogue on the NRA, it was actually declared unconstitutional.
Yes.
By the Supreme Court less than 2 years after it was created. So not only was the stamp controversial, but the entire program was controversial. And you'll notice that use of this stamp ends very abruptly when the Supreme Court decided that the NRA would exist no longer. So I it's a cheap little stamp. If you look at the catalog value, it's worthless, but for me it's the most important stamp of the last century.
You just got me very interested in it. I think maybe this podcast will do This Day in History and put an NRA little spiel in the front of it.
I'm going to start looking.
Yeah, ain't that something?
If you find anything, let me know.
I'm sure I have.
Don't care. Well, you probably have thousands of them. It's like never
How
thought
about
of that
on,
before.
Civilian Conservation Corps mail.
Oh, that would be cool to get like the.
I have my other main collecting interest is CCC mail. I have a single frame exhibit that I've been showing of it. I don't know many people who collect it, but again, it ties into that period, the 1930s, the government relief programs. I collect Works Progress Administration mail as well.
Cool.
So anything governmental from the 30s, I'll collect it.
Let me take a picture of it real quick so we can show all the people on the podcast.
Sure. You don't have any CCC mail, do you?
Yes.
Do you? With you here?
No.
Back home?
I accumulated. CCC official mail from the work camps.
Yeah.
To other work camps, workers to work camps, all without stamps, all official.
Yeah.
But yet, that's how the guys communicated
yeah.
to one another. So you have to learn how to read the unit marks and where they're going to realize what it is.
Is it for sale or is it your collection?
I accumulate. I'll find them for you.
Yeah, what do you collect?
I collect the postal history of scouting worldwide.
Is that you? That's not your exhibit upstairs?
No, I don't.
No.
I've exhibited once. I found it to be torturous, tenuous, and maybe we'll do it again, but.
Well, I found out like half an hour ago that we are an award-winning podcast. However, speaking about the torturous side, I messed up on how I submitted the podcast, and so we didn't get the ribbon that we really deserve. All the judges loved the podcast, but they all said, you know, this and this, and they gave me criticisms. They were like, all I had to do was get you the iTunes listing. And they go, yeah, if you would have gotten this, you would have gotten a better award. It's like, okay, fine, next time. But we are an award-winning podcast as of half an hour ago.
Good.
Congratulations.
But we always rag on judges, too.
Well, judges are some of my best friends.
Yep. Well, we've always had the thing that the higher the award, the more boring the exhibit.
No comment.
So tell us about H.R. Harmer.
Sure. H.R. Harmer, the British part of the company, was founded in 1918. Mr. Henry Harmer was a signer of the RDP, one of the most prominent British philatelists before World War II. He opened a New York office in 1940. As the war was starting up, he figured it would be better to sell stuff on this side of the Atlantic than back home. So he opened the American office in New York City in 1940. The company really came to prominence in 1946 when they sold Franklin Roosevelt's collection. The year after the president's death.
Yep, I have a couple of those.
Yeah, over a series of four sales, they.
Hold on, Jason. Stanley.
Yes.
Dinner is Chinese tonight, and we'll meet here and then take off in the car.
All right. I don't know what I'm gonna actually do.
Okay.
I may pull a cash and go somewhere else.
Yeah. Yesterday I owe him dinner because yesterday I went to Target.
I ate here. You should buy my dinner here. You know what it cost me?
Oh, I can imagine.
$45. I had a steak. It was actually much better than your meal.
Wow, that's cheaper than anything in your inventory.
I'm going to leave that in. I'm not editing that out.
Bought another The problem is every time I buy something, I got to call New Zealand.
What does a thesaurus have for breakfast?
A diner.
Synonym rolls.
Hey, which side of the horse has the most hair?
The outside. I knew that one.
Hey, you got a long way to learn about philately.
Okay.
Back to it's a long way to Tipperary.
Yeah.
Okay.
Back to 1946.
Sure. What's a pot for?
What's a pot for?
You know what a pot's for? It's for cooking.
What's the number one use of leather in the United States? Holding cows together.
No, that's not leather. That's their skin. Leather means it has to
be been
cured.
Knackered.
Lacquered.
Knackered.
Knackered.
They knacker.
They knacker it.
Oh yeah. Okay. So let's go ahead.
Is this on?
A little known.
Yeah, look.
A little known thing. Smokey the Bear's middle name.
Uh oh. Don't know.
The.
Smokey the Bear.
No, that's his first name.
Smokey the
Bear. The Smokey the Bear. Smokey's his middle name.
The Ohio State University. Smokey the Bear.
No, the Ohio State. They won today.
You guys are increasing my editing time.
That's Stanley. I'm sorry about that. When you get us
I didn't know you guys. You're working.
See that?
That's all right.
So that was Stanley, everybody who didn't recognize him.
And he'll be edited out. Along with me.
So
anyway, it was that 1946 series of four sales for the Franklin Roosevelt collection really brought H.R. Harmer to prominence in the United States.
Yeah, like I said, we had a whole story on him. The stamps on the back.
Yes.
Where they came from.
A lot of dealers were quick to buy up, you know, because a lot of his collection was exceptional and a lot of it was very common.
When he was at the spa, people would give him mail and he would just cut squares and throw them in a box to give away.
Exactly.
Well, when they got the boxes, they go, this is all Roosevelt. Let's stamp it and see if we can get any money
exactly.
for it.
Exactly. So you can get a Roosevelt stamp for a couple of bucks today. But there was some better stuff, and that really made H.R. Harmer a big name in the philatelic world. They were one of the Nassau Street firms and a big part of the philatelic scene. In the 50s, they sold the Alfred Kasperi collection, which was at the time one of the largest philatelic holdings in the world, on par with a Ferrari or any of the legendary names of the 20th century. Continuing right on up through selling the Alfred Lichtenstein and Louise Boyd Dale collection from the 60s up through 2004 even. There were still remainders of that sale. So H.R. Harmer has had some of the largest sales in American philatelic auctioneering history. Present day, we're part of the Global Philatelic Network with Heinrich Kohler in Germany, Corin Fila in both Switzerland and the Netherlands, and John Bull in Hong Kong. And we're the American arm of the Global Philatelic Network. So we're trying to carry on in the legacy of the great sales of decades past.
Good, good. And Tom, I met you there several times at the sales.
Yes.
Yeah.
I've been a frequent bidder at the H.R. Harmer sales for the last 5 years.
Lost many a lot to you.
thank you very much. But, I've been, I guess I have a reputation of being a strong bidder for all worldwide material.
Yep.
I do recommend the auction. They get a diverse amount of material.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's the local one. So everybody in Southern California goes there. I guess if you lived in San Francisco, you would go to other ones, but...
I live in Ohio, so I fly in for it.
Yeah, but you get to get out of Ohio and get into California, which has to have some benefit to it.
That's a benefit.
Yeah.
I was going to say something political, but I won't.
No, go ahead. You
I
tell
can
us.
Edit out. No. I was just going to say, it's sometimes I don't know if they take red state money there.
Oh. Well, I don't know. You look at the political map, it's pretty red right now.
We'll have to see how it works out.
We'll see how it works out.
I'm an optimist.
Well, in the last podcast we had, we were trying to predict who would win the vote by how much junk mail you got from each candidate. And while the candidates were pretty even, Hillary Clinton used more stamps. So she won 3-0. 3 stamped envelopes versus Trump, 0 stamped envelopes. So our prediction was just as good as everybody else's. So why don't you give a phone number or something like that? There's a lot of people out there looking to sell stuff.
Sure. HRHarmer.com. You can contact us off on there, as well as our phone number, which is 714-389-9178. We'd be more than happy to put you in touch with one of our philatelists. Whether you just have questions about how a philatelic auction house works, whether it's an appraisal, really anything we can do for you, we'd be more than happy to help a collector out.
Why don't you give them a plug, give them your number too, so they can call you and ask for
SSS Postal History, SSSOnline.com. And when you see Vilno Man on eBay, that's us too. Oh. And we do 4 shows. We do Chicago PEX.
Well, you don't have a booth here.
Yes.
Oh, you do?
That's where we're standing at it.
Oh. I dragged you away from your booth. Thank you
I'm rarely behind the table.
Ah, that's
I have a reputation of being an avant-garde type person.
Oh, very avant-garde, yes.
But we do West PEX.
Yes, great to see you there.
Greatest show in the United States as far as I'm concerned.
Have to agree.
APS Summer.
Yep.
And Chicago PEX. I go to Garfield Perry because it's my home.
I go to APS Winter as long as it's below the snow level. And that's kind of tough because last time it was below the snow level in Arkansas, and they still got snowed out. Well, so
wait till this year.
Yeah, I know. I live in Nevada, and it's in Reno. And I told him, you know, there's a 50-50 chance that people in California will not be able to get to your show. And 50-50, that's pretty bad. I mean, there's a pass there where people actually ate each other in the Donner Pass. So hopefully no stamp collectors will lead each other.
Too expensive.
Too expensive. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Cash.
Cheers.
Cheers. It's neat stuff. Test. So I'm here with Mark Easter. And if you look on our Facebook page, you're going to see a whole bunch of Zeppelin covers. That was at his table. I put down that it's the very definition of the wow factor, and quite a few people commented the same. So, Mark, how's the show going for you?
Show's going well. Happy to see you guys, and we're looking forward to seeing everyone visit the stamp show.
I just saw in your paper, you have a 357 full sheet of blue paper.
Yes, it's a sheet of 100, mint never hinged, and it's the only one I've ever seen.
Yeah. Yeah, I'd say so. That's an impressive item. $10,500.
Yeah, and Cash, look at the one right next to it from the 1800s. Number 209.
Yep.
10 cent. Looks like Webster.
I'm going to bring my camera and take some pictures to put it up on the web so you can see this stuff. Obviously, we always have a problem of holding things up to the microphone.
Hey, and we have things for children also. Bring the kids, bring the family. It's a great event to come visit and get the kids interested in stamps and educate them about history of the U.S.
Yeah, you know? By the time they listen to this, the show will be over.
Well, that's true. Okay.
So what do you have that's really neat that has a good backstory to it?
Oh, boy. Really neat that has a good backstory. Well, we have the Trans-Mississippi stamp.
Uh-huh. Oh, that's the wagon train stamp that has the imperf between.
Yes, so that it's a vertical strip of 4, and it's the sister strip to the one that's in the book mm-hmm. that was done by Brookman back in the 1920s, 30s, 40s, yeah.
How much is this guy? Because it says POR.
Oh, boy, 87,000.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Nice looking pieces. Wow, you know, you have some really good stuff here on your table. This is impressive.
So here, Cash, here goes another item that was newly discovered. It's a modern duck hunting stamp.
Yeah, you showed me this yesterday.
Yeah, yeah. It's a mini sheet where they only made 1,000 of them and all signed by the designer, but one stuck to the other and was unsigned, which makes it a modern-day rarity error, which sells, sells for $5,000.
You know, you could send this off to Mark Anderson and he'll probably sign it for you.
Yes, yes, but we'll skip that. Unless we do it in a different color beside blue, black, or gold.
Oh, that would be, you know, purple signature, rare. But yes, it's probably more rare without a signature at all.
Yeah.
Cool.
And, you know, but...
So tell me the story on the Zeppelin covers.
Oh, the Zeppelin covers were done all by this one gentleman. I'm not exactly sure who it was, but they were all addressed to members of his family.
Oh, they weren't addressed to the same person?
Different members of the family.
Okay.
Yep. It's like your dad would go out and stamp up all the envelopes with a $2.60 rate and sent them all to different members of the family. And I think at the time he had spent at least $100 back in
1930. Yeah, this was like at the heart of the Depression.
Yes.
And he ponied up like over $100.
Yeah.
To get these flight covers for Zeppelin. But then he obviously kept them all.
Right.
So he never made any money on them.
No.
He put them in a box someplace, and somebody after he died said, "Hey, wow, look what I found."
80 years later.
80 years later, yeah.
80
so,
years later. Wow. So it's always good to look up in Grandpa's attic. You never know what's hiding in there.
Wouldn't that be great if you just found a box with a whole bunch of Zeppelin covers in it?
You know, just like the story, somebody was in Hong Kong, they opened up a little box and it with these very rare Dragon stamps that were worth $1 million up in the attic for 100 years.
What's your best find?
Wow, what is my best find? Well, you know, I recently found a revenue booklet that was very scarce. It's a United Fruit Company. Mm-hmm. And it was sitting in a book, who knows, maybe for 100 years it was a complimentary item at the time. And today, being that there's so few of them around, they're worth $3,000 to $5,000 for the book.
United Fruit Company.
Yeah, yeah. It was a banana company, an old banana company, which is a famous company now. I'm not sure which company today, but...
Yeah.
Intact panes in the book, the original book from 1913. Yeah.
That is cool.
Yeah, and there's a lot of history. It brings you back to the old fruit. Oh, Central America.
Yeah.
The company's, yeah, Central America fruit.
Where the term Banana Republics comes from.
Right.
Yep.
Right. I shop there all the time.
You get your clothes at Banana Republic.
Yeah. But to the Chicago shows, whenever we come out here, beside the other shows that we do, we try to bring new material, new finds, things that have never been offered to the public before, and that's what we love the most.
Cool.
New, you know.
You want to give people a phone number just in case they have something to sell or want to buy a, what is it, Fruit Company wireless, United Fruit Company wireless booklet.
Yeah, even back then they knew what wireless was.
Oh yeah, we're going to do a whole thing on Tesla.
Yeah, yeah.
Tesla and Marconi.
Yeah, to see more of these items, visit marcus.com. You could reach us at 1-800-470-7708. We also buy stamps, U.S., worldwide, mint, used, single, sheets, errors, and you name it, we buy it. And we do travel.
Very cool. Test. Great. So, Don, how is the show going?
The show's going fine. I'm at booth 39. I sell mostly classic United States postal history, starting from the 1700s through the Liberty series of 1950. And I have approximately 5,000 covers in stock, and I have to get it here by FedEx and have a great time unpacking and packing and all that stuff. And Love this business.
How much packing do you actually do? Because you've got a lot of stuff here on your table.
11 boxes, about a foot cubed. It cost me about $300 to ship them one way, halfway across the country.
Yeah, okay. You have, though, what an exhibit of waterway covers.
I do.
It was just incredible.
I have a number of Steve Roth's exhibit covers, most on annotated pages from his exhibit. Very interesting stuff. Very interesting steamboat markings and the like. The Mississippi River and also Great Lakes.
Oh, yeah. Is some of them, they have the names of the ships on them?
Name of the boat or ship, yes.
The route agents, what's some of your favorite ones in there?
Well, I've got two from Alabama that are rated scarcity 10 in Simpson. It's a red illustration of a sailboat, and it, as I understand it, there's only four or five known of that marking.
Yeah, I remember those. It's like a little bitty, the cancel is actually a little sailboat.
That's right.
Yeah.
And a lot of the steam companies in those days would advertise their service by trying to illustrate the markings in such a way to catch a customer's eye so they'll remember the name of the boat.
Those are definitely eye-catching. I mean, you can't miss one.
I have a boat that's named Uncle Sam, for example. And that's pretty distinctive, I guess.
And then you have a great other piece of postal history right behind you. Spiro Agnew Speaks Out.
Yeah, 45 RPM record, I think, from the time Spiro Agnew was VP.
It is right there up front, so you're obviously proud of it.
Oh, yeah. It's really rare. It's worth a lot of money, probably $5.
Yeah, but it's cool. We like the stories behind the stamps.
That's right.
Well, Don, why don't you give them a phone number if they want to sell, if they have anything, they can check on you or they can sell stuff to you.
Yeah, I'm at 617-686-0288, and my website is postalnet.com.
Great. Hope you have a good show.
Thank you.
What is this about? What is the
no,
team?
No, right now we're just doing a check. Okay, we're recording. Okay. So, I'm at Chicago PEX. Why don't you introduce yourself?
Yeah, I'm Peter Tai, and I'm also at Chicago PEX, as you can guess. Mm-hmm. And I was the literature judge for this podcast the other day. And
you were a literature judge for everything. You're a full judge.
Yeah, well, sort of. I mean, only literature, not philatelic exhibits. Yeah. Okay.
But you were also when you were introduced to me, you come out from California.
From California, yeah.
Oh, where
Davis.
Do you live?
Yeah.
Oh, Davis.
Davis, yeah.
So how were the exhibits overall? Did you see?
We had quite a few strong exhibits. I mean, that was more than we really expected. We had quite a few book articles. Mm-hmm. We was a very strong handbooks, catalogs, and the most strange things we had was a podcast.
Oh yeah. Well, it was a funny story about that. When we were at Tescal, a fellow Ken from Chicago PEC said, "Hey, you know, your literature, why don't you submit?" And we said, "I don't know how you're going to grade us, but have a ball." Yeah, here you go. Here's my $25. So now we can say we're award-winning podcast.
Yeah, you got a silver, was it silver bronze?
Silver bronze. Yeah, we won't mention what the level was, but we did get an award. No, I'll be honest with you, the happiest thing was when all three judges said that they enjoyed the podcast.
We certainly did okay, and I also looked at listening to some of the older ones, and I saw that was much better than the one you submitted. Okay, so if you had submitted one of the earlier, you probably get a step up. Okay.
Well, you know, I just submitted the one that we did that week.
Yeah.
So, maybe next time we'll have a special for you the judges.
Oh, what take a whole year? Of how many years? 50 a year?
This is our 101st podcast. Our 100 was last week, and we popped champagne and everything.
Yeah. You could submit more than just one.
Oh, okay. Well, next time I will.
We'll give the judges something to work on. Okay, but.
Yeah, but then, you know, you have to listen to like 2 or 3 hours of this and you go, no, same corny jokes over and over.
Yeah. No, I mean, I don't say the judges will be listening to all of them. They would just pick something to get a feeling for what it is about.
Good idea. So you collect?
I collect the postal stationery, mainly Southern Africa.
Oh, okay.
British Southern Africa, French Southern Africa, Madagascar. Zanzibar.
I have to say something from the accent. You're from South Africa, or
No. I'm a Scandinavian from Denmark.
Oh, okay.
But the accent could sound like a South African. Yeah. I can hear that.
Well, excellent. Thank you very much. Thank you for reviewing our podcast. Thank you for everything.
Yeah, thanks for submitting it. Okay.
Check. Yep, we're fine. So, Andy, you're head of the Youth Center of Chicago PEX, right?
That's correct. I've been working in the Youth Booth for many years, and we're now calling it the Beginners and Youth Booth.
Oh, Beginners and Youth. That's actually much better. You can get older people who are just restarting stamp collecting or are joining, and they don't have to be youth. You can just teach them about the new stuff.
Exactly. I mean, the whole point of it is to... try to expand stamp collecting. You know, we'll focus on youth, and most of our outreach activities focus on youth, but we very much welcome, like you said, you know, collectors who are just getting started, and we want to give them some resources to start, or if they're teachers and parents that want to foster, you know, their child's collecting interests or their students' collecting interests, by all means, we would want to help them as well.
You know something? I've done probably 10 or 15 of these. You're the first person who brought that up, and I think that is so great that, you know, it's not just youth, it's beginners. So if you had some teenagers who were getting interested in stamp collecting, you know, they would avoid the youth group, but they would go to the beginner group.
Right, exactly. And so we like to lightheartedly call it, kids and kids at heart. So if you self-identify as...
Which I do.
as a 65-year-old kid or whatever, then we'd be more than happy to take you on and get you started stamp collecting, because that's what it's all about.
Excellent. Well, it's Sunday, so the show always drops down on Sunday. How was your show so far?
Oh, it was great. We actually did about three times. We had about three times as many kids through this year as last year. So we're operating at a 300%. Now, the bar was pretty low from last year for a variety of reasons, but we were happy to have the kids, and you know, the kids always come accompanied by adults, so the adults also get interested, especially when they see their kids, real interested in it. So we like to think of it as a family hobby, and as a matter of fact, it's intergenerational. You don't know how many parents have come up to me while their child is very engaged and say, "Oh, gee, you know, I never thought about getting the kid interested in stamp collecting. As a matter of fact, we got Grandpa's stamp album still sitting up in the attic." And so I say, yeah, maybe it's time to bring it down, because look at them go. They get really interested when the stamps are presented in the fashion which we do, which is because you can't see on the radio, as we often say. We have a nice retail atmosphere. We have very colorful signage. I have 8.5 by 11 sized stamp blow-ups images to make our booth really colorful. You'll also notice that the bins are at kid level, right? They're actually on the ground, and I have some AstroTurf there. I mean, the carpet's nice, but we often go into parks and other places where it's a lot more comfortable for a 7-year-old or 11-year-old to sit on the ground than it is to stand at a table where they might be, they have to reach not only up to the table, but over the stamp bin to get inside. So this allows them the visual smorgasbord of stamps that stamp collecting is.
You also did one thing that I thought was very interesting. You have teachers' homework pages that relate to stamp collecting.
That's right. The APS Stamps Teach program provides free on their website downloadable worksheets in five categories. The categories are art, language arts, mathematics, science, and social studies. For most people, the social studies or the history is the natural,
right.
But they're actually surprised to find that there's language arts related things and mathematics related worksheets for the various curricula in the schools, and I found those to be very helpful.
The APS does those?
APS has them right on their website.
I spoke with them even if they didn't bring it up. Yours is the first person who has had them out where people could see them.
Yeah.
And I thought they were fantastic. They really give a way for a teacher to present it, not as stamp collecting, but just as sort of, well, I have little kids. And they talk about relics. And they talk about stamp relics or coin relics. And the way that these pages were presented was very, very forward thinking, let's say, and very user friendly for the teachers.
Oh yeah, very much so. Some of the sheets that I used, I specifically actually did a full curriculum for an art center earlier this year.
Wow.
So there's, stamps are very visual, objects. And so we talk about, there's a lot of monochromatic stamps. So we talk about identifying color, stamps that are mostly a certain color. We talk about stamps that have images on them, of different shapes, whether the images are made up of, circles or rectangles or triangles or diamonds or whatever. Additionally, we talked about images that are, landscapes or portraits or mm-hmm. still lives. And again, this went right along with the art curriculum that they were already doing
yep.
in the classroom. And so it was a perfect add-on and just add stamps.
Yeah. Well, is there anything you want to plug?
I've been doing stamps for kids now for 10 years. The little background history of this is we started giving away stamps at Taste of Chicago, which was our big lakefront festival. And that Taste of Chicago isn't what it used to be, and so we decided to, and plus it was only once a year, so we decided to go out into the parks, into the neighborhood festivals, art centers, schools, and really do stamp outreach. Here at Chicago PEX, we're one of the best shows in the country, I'd like to say.
I've been to a lot, and this is one of the best, yes.
We're the best show in the Midwest, I like to say. And so we have to have a youth booth. It's mm-hmm. sort of perfunctory to have a youth booth at a stamp show, especially one like this, because usually the kids that come here, they're already being brought by stamp collectors, so it's a little bit preaching to the converted, that's fine. So instead of having a youth booth at a stamp show, what I like to stress is having a stamp booth at a youth show. So we are going out to places like a neighborhood fair, neighborhood festival, and just give out our stamps there. And I see so many happy faces and so
yeah.
many kids and parents and teachers and administrators that go away really happy. I'm really satisfied that we are doing the right thing, and I'd love for others to follow that model.
Fantastic. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you, Cash.
That was really good.
See, I'm a graphic designer.
There has to be a certain amount
is
of peaks.
Is this like live or?
No.
Okay, good.
If anything happens, if somebody starts talking to you, I just edit it all out. This all
okay.
gets heavy, heavy
they'll
edited.
Come and maybe talk. People yep. just pop in. So.
I'm here at Chicago PEX with Dana with the ASDA. Dana, why don't you tell everybody a little bit about yourself?
Well, I am from Bellefonte, Pennsylvania, and I started out in philately working for the American Philatelic Society, and was there for 10 years and moved over to the American Stamp Dealers Organization. So that's my background in philately. I love a lot of different things on stamps, but one of my favorites are elephants. I have some really fun postcards. One's a leather one. I have some pop-up fold-out elephant campaign pieces from Republicans from the 1940s, I think. So
you're
heavy-duty
Republican, right?
No, I am not. But I do like elephants.
So tell us a little bit about the ASDA.
Well, the ASDA is an organization of stamp dealers. They are part of our organization because they feel it's important to have a company represent them so that people know when they're buying from these dealers that they are very ethical, they follow strict guidelines, they have worked very hard over the years to be the best in the field they can in their topics, whether it's postal history, topical stamps, ephemera, and they want to make sure that they have the backing of the ASDA in order to better themselves and their company to help their people that collect from them.
So sort of like a watchdog group.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's voluntary.
Yes.
People join.
Yeah, people join it. And over the years, they've had great success being part of the organization. You can find them on our website, which is AmericanStampDealer.com, under searching by a dealer. You can search by United States, by country, by specialty to find different dealers across the world that are members of our organization.
Oh, and aside, if we have a lot of people who have stamps, they want to buy and sell, but if they want to sell stamps, there is a link that they can click where they can search for dealers in their areas.
Right.
Who are ASDA members.
Exactly. So if you're in California or Chicago or Florida, wherever you're at, you can actually find dealers in your area. They could come to your home, you could send them pictures, and then if you have more specialized items and they might not necessarily deal in those, you may be in Florida but or Canada or California if you're in Florida, because those people will be able to help you better. And that's what their goal is. So if you're looking to sell things as well and or get into the market to purchase, they can help both directions.
Sounds great. Why don't you give the website one more time?
It's AmericanStampDealer.com.
Cool. Thank you very much.
It's quite amazing. Return to send up. Return to send up.
Thank you for joining us for episode 100. You can reach us with your questions or comments at stampshowheretoday@gmail.com, Twitter at stampshowht, or leave a message on our Google Voice number 1-949-873-4298. You can also check out our website at stampshowheretoday.com or follow us on Facebook or watch us on YouTube. And as always, keep collecting.
This episode of Stamp Show Here Today is brought to you by the Philatelic Book of Secrets, the book that teaches you about repurse, regums, color varieties, and much more. Get yours for $10 at www.philatelicsecrets.com today.
Hello, everyone. My name is David Kugel, and I am one of the co-owners of Daniel F. Kelleher Auctions and Kelleher and Rogers Fine Asian Auctions. I would like to present our firm's growing list of services available to you in terms of how to go about selling a stamp collection and the steps one would take to achieve the best results for you. We provide boutique auction services to 100% of the philatelic market. All collectors with collections as little as $5,000 to collections reaching well into seven figures. We sell to more collectors than any other auction firm. Our diverse mailing list of active bidders is the world's largest. This is evidenced by higher prices realized due to collector competition and more underbidders. See for yourself at our website, www.kelleherauctions.com. We are the only American-owned international philatelic auction firm with offices in the United States, United Kingdom, and Hong Kong. We are also the publishers of the Kelleher's Collectors Connection, already one of the premier magazines in philately with a worldwide circulation. Any collector may subscribe without charge, call, visit our website, or email us now. Let us work for you. The results will speak for themselves. And you can contact us toll-free in the United States at 877-316-2895. We are so delighted to be one of this podcast hosts today and really, really encourage you to enjoy philately, the hobby that allows one to enjoy life and live longer. Return to sender.